Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jay Horowitz, a special edition of Amazing Conversations with the great Boomer Esiason, host of the number one rated WFAN, Boomer Geo Show. That's my Imus imitation, Boomer. and a fixture on NFL Today. I know you don't need another job. Can I give you a job for a couple minutes?
Sure, Jay,
if you
whatever
the GM
you need.
Or the Giants and the Jets, what would you do today?
If I were the Giants, I would definitely rip it all apart and start over. This is what I've been advocating on WFAN for the last few weeks. As soon as Daniel Jones went down, I think the season was a foregone conclusion. And now, not that the players or the coaches think this way, but maybe the front office might, maybe the ownership will. You got to be thinking about the upcoming future years and the sustainability of your franchise. And because the Giants have not been very good over the last 10 years, it's time to make a move. And I'm not talking about the head coaching move. I'm talking about a quarterback and to restock this roster that is kind of weak on players. And I think it's really up to Joe Shane, their general manager, to rebuild it around a young quarterback. And hopefully, from my perspective, they get either the first or the second pick in the draft at the upcoming 2024 draft. Most people believe that there are two can't-miss quarterbacks at the top of this draft, one, of course, being Caleb Williams from USC and the other one being Drake May from North Carolina. So if the Giants can get one of those two players, then they got to start their rebuild and they got to do it immediately. But that would force them to lose the rest of their games, I believe, and only win two games out of 17. And these next 2 months would be a long two months for the Giant fan, the Giant coaching staff, and, of course, the Giant front office and ownership.
Boomer, I've been seeing the ticker over to Giants 1958, way back. Did your heart go out to Tommy DeVito yesterday? I mean, local kid, you were from New York, played for the Jets. How much empathy did you feel for him yesterday?
You know, when you put that in a singular thought, it's a great thought. It's a great dream come true for the local young man. He seems like a really great kid. I don't think he ever thought that he was going to be starting for the Giants as this season began, but I'm sure it was a dream of his when he was growing up. You know, he did play quite a few games in college and was certainly a good player in college, and there's no reason why he couldn't actually get onto a football field in the NFL and be somewhat successful. But, you know, he's just not ready to play. People don't realize what goes into the position of playing quarterback at this level and how quick the game is, how many things you have to learn. And quite frankly, if you are the practice squad quarterback when the regular season starts, you don't really get to work with the first team. You don't get to see a lot of the real defenses. You're doing a lot of scout team work, getting your own team prepared to play against their next opponent. So, you know, Tommy's accorded himself well. Nobody's expecting anything but what he has done. As long as he doesn't turn the ball over and play foolish football, then you know he's thinking the right way that a quarterback should be thinking. So I'm happy for him. It's a dream come true for him. And maybe there's a movie in here somewhere. Who knows?
How about the Jets?
Well, they have a problem at quarterback too. You know, Zach Wilson was a second overall pick 3 years ago and just has not turned himself into a top-level quarterback who was drafted that high in the draft. And we see the same mistakes that we've seen for the last 3 years. You know, he's 30 games into his career. You usually get a really good handle as to whether or not a kid has grasped the enormity of what he's doing and able to process the field as quickly as you need to be. And, you know, if I compare him to C.J. Stroud, who was this year's second overall draft pick, who's playing for the Houston Texans, there's really no comparison. C.J. is light years ahead of him, and he's only 7 games or 8 games into his career. So you just wonder if Zach has what it takes, especially in this market, to become that quarterback. I don't think he has that. I think he needs to go somewhere else in a smaller market with a different offense, a different voice in his ear, and get out of this noise market of the NFL. But you can't do that now. That would have to come at the end of the season. And, you know, like I said, we're a long way away from that. And there's a lot of learning still yet to be done. But I just don't see the future for Zach Wilson being a part of the Jets after 2023.
Boomer, how does the C.J. Stroud and the Joshua Dobbins stuff happen? You know, Joshua Dobbins, two wins, great win. C.J. Stroud, I mean, it's just luck, good scouting. How does that stuff happen?
Well, Josh has been around a while. He's played on at least five different teams in the last year. So everybody in the NFL knows who Joshua Dobbs is. You know, he was with Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, and I guess they felt like their quarterback room was really crowded, so they got rid of him. And then he was traded to the Cardinals like 2 weeks before the regular season started this year in 2023. And everybody knows he's a smart kid. You know, they call him the Pastronaut because of his engineering background, and I guess that's what he majored in college, electrical or space engineering or whatever it was. So he's an extremely bright kid. I don't think people are overly overwhelmed by his arm strength, but he certainly has got the smarts to play the position. So Minnesota did the right thing. They tried to save their season. They had to get somebody who could play just in case the rookie that they were starting in place of Kirk Cousins got hurt or couldn't handle it. Well, of course, the rookie gets hurt. So now Josh gets a second chance. So it's really one of the best stories in the NFL this year. And they're on a good team, and he's on a good team, and everybody seems to like him. So maybe they make it to the playoffs. As far as C.J. Stroud, you know, that's like hitting the lottery. I mean, to have a kid come in, second overall pick, and be the starter and get your team into the playoff hunt halfway through his rookie season, that's nothing short of amazing, Jay. That would be like, you know, a rookie starting pitcher being in contention for, let's say, the Cy Young, because he's in contention not only for Rookie of the Year, but the MVP right now as we speak.
It's crazy,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and how about if your first round draft pick, you know, led the league in batting or led the league in home runs? I mean, that's kind of what this kid is doing for Houston. And I'll tell you what, it's great to see it. It's great to see young kids really step in and be able to handle it, which is really amazing from the eyes of not only myself, but many have played the position over the years.
Isn't it crazy what happened with Rodgers, four plays, and Daniel Jones comes back? It's nuts, isn't it, what happens to these two local teams?
Yeah, it's really sad. And unfortunately, we've been through this with a lot of local teams around here. And when you do what I do for the last 17 years, you see a lot of ups and you see a lot of downs. And when the teams are down, whether it be our New York Mets or whether it be the Knicks, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, you name it, I can feel it, you know, through the airwaves from the fans. I mean, they want blood. They want to win. They're spending a lot of money supporting a lot of our local teams. And watching what happened with Aaron and Daniel is just – it's sad. You know, you never want to see guys of that character, that integrity, go out there and not be able to do what they do best, and that's play football. But, you know, for Aaron, you know, he woke up from a darkness retreat. I'm not sure if you know this, Jay. And when he woke up from that darkness retreat last offseason, he said he wanted to play for the Jets. And unfortunately, now he's really finding out what darkness is all about because, I mean, you can't make this story line up. And certainly I hope for his sake that he does not try to push it and come back towards the end of the season. That would be – I don't think that would be a very smart move.
Is that crazy? He's saying, listen, December he wants to play.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's all nonsense. And I do believe that he should wait until next year, make sure that Achilles is totally healed and come back stronger than ever. And hopefully the coaching staff hangs here and stays here because you never know about the owners. And you know this business, Jay, you've worked in it for a long time. These owners get pushed for different reasons, whether it be friends in their own inner circle, whether it be the fan base, the business side of the team and the organization is saying we can't sell tickets because of the present product that we're putting out there. So there are a lot of variables that will determine whether or not these coaches and front offices will stay here, depending on how the owners feel about them.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Boom, you played with the Jets in the mid-90s. How much has the media landscape changed from when you were there to what it is now? It's night and day, right?
It is night and day. Yeah, it's really night and day. I mean, it was the back pages back in my day. It was the talk shows. It was, you know, Mike and Chris, of course, on WFAN, Imus in the morning. You know, ESPN was, you know, just really getting its footing going. They didn't have all these different opinion shows that they have now. Social media has basically ruined the landscape of, I think, of sports. I mean, there's a lot of good reasons for social media, but then there's all the bad that comes along with it and how these players get themselves in trouble. And if they are tied to their phone, which almost 95%, if not 99% of the young player is, they're seeing all their mentions. They're seeing how many people, like, if they play well, it's great to pick up your phone and because everybody wants to be liked. But if you play poorly and you play poorly for a number of years, let's say like Zach Wilson has, I can't even imagine what he must be dealing with from a mental standpoint.
It's got to affect him, right?
It has to affect him. Yes. Yeah, we're all human. You never liked when we made fun of you on WFAN. So we always heard back from you. Hey, stop making fun of me.
You know? Well, speaking of what was I going to say? You're with your teams are doing great, right? The Rangers are great. The Knicks are over 500. And your pecking order, is it Rangers, Knicks, Mets, Mets, Rangers, Knicks, the same? How would your pecking order be?
Well, my pecking order is Rangers first, Mets second, Knicks third. And the Rangers have always been my first love. My dad took me to Madison Square Garden when it opened in 1968. He actually worked on the building, and his company, who he worked for, had some season tickets. So I think we made about five or six games from the ages of 7 to about 15. He would come back out to Isla, pick me up. We'd take the train back in. We'd go to a Ranger game on a Saturday or a Sunday. And I mean, I just loved going to those games. I just loved the intensity and just the high velocity, even back then, of what I think is the greatest sport to see in person. So and then if it wasn't that, then I was sitting on the stoop in my Mets uniform waiting for him to come and get me and take me to Shea Stadium.
And who's your favorite Met Boomer?
Tom Seaver. I don't know if you can see over my shoulder, there's a Tom Seaver statue that my previous partner, Craig Carton, gave to me for my 50th birthday. And it's one of the most beloved statues that I own. And it's a beautiful statue done by a dear friend of mine. So, Tom has always been my favorite guy. And that, you know, when I took to the air, Jay, I don't know if you know this, but back in 2007, when Craig and I started this campaign. I wanted a Tom Seaver statue out in front of Citi Field. I remember. And I'm like, I can't believe that we are not honoring one of our best players for whatever the reasons are. I don't know. I'm not, privy to all the internal conversations. And I got a chance to see Tom and Nancy Seaver out at their winery during Super Bowl 50 in San Francisco. I made it a mission of mine to go see his winery up in Calistoga, go sit and talk with him. And he was just in the beginning forays of what he was dealing with from a mental aspect. But he knew who I was, and we sat and we talked baseball. We talked history. I asked him about being a New York Met when I was a kid. And it was really an amazing time for me to be able to sit there looking at one of my idols and getting a chance to sit down and talk with him and have a great conversation. So he is my all-time favorite.
He had a great sense of humor, Boomer. The first in 73 when he came back from the Reds, I was in the training room in St. Petersburg in Florida, and he was in a whirlpool. I said, I go, Mr. Seaver, can I talk to you for a minute? He pulled me over to the whirlpool, took the hose, put it down my pants, ruined my suit and my things. But that was my first meeting with Tom, the great Tom Seaver. What was it? Any favorite game, Boomer, you remember?
God, there were so many games. I can't remember that far back, Jay. All I remember is wearing the number 41 jersey to school. A couple times at Halloween, I would dress up as Tom Seaver when I was a kid. Rod Gilbert and Walt Clyde Frazier were the three New York athletes that I idolized growing up. I had to have a pair of the Pumas, the red Pumas that were the Clydes. I had Rod's jersey, I had Tom's jersey, and of course I loved the great Burt Jones, who played for the Baltimore Colts, one of the reasons why I wore number 7 along with Rod Gilbert. So those were my four idols growing up. I had a chance to meet all four of those guys. And you know, when you meet your idol and they show you the respect that you would, that I was showing them when I was a kid, it just made me realize that I picked four of the great guys of all time. And I often think back about that, and I hope that I would carry myself as a professional athlete the way that they did. And hopefully I, you know, inspired some young man or young woman somewhere along the line to go after their dreams as well.
But we don't really mind about you. I've been around a long time, 40 plus years. The way you've kept the charity for Gunner going for almost 30 years. I mean, yeah. It's really the money you've raised, the visibility you've gotten. I mean, and now Gunner's married, has a son, right? I mean,
that's right. Yeah, it's real. We're living a real miracle, Jay, to be honest with you. And people don't know really how I got started in all this. They all think it's because Gunner was diagnosed with CF, but in 1989, I was fortunate enough, the 88 season, the 89 offseason, I received my MVP award.
Right.
And it was at a dinner in Washington, D.C. And Frank DeFord was speaking at that dinner. And Frank had lost his daughter, Alex, to the disease of cystic fibrosis at the age of 8. I did not know that. I didn't even know what cystic fibrosis was until that night. And I was so floored by his story that I asked him after that dinner if I could get involved in any way, shape, or form to help put a name or face or raise money for CF. Now, this was 1989. Gunner was not born until 1991. So I was involved in CF 2 years prior to Gunner's birth. Gunner was not diagnosed with CF until 1993, my first year with the New York Jets. As a matter of fact, my first practice with the Jets in May of 1993, I got called out of that practice, had to go back to Cincinnati, and that's when I found out Gunner was diagnosed with CF. So 4 years later, from that 89 dinner, that fateful dinner that I met Frank DeFord and got involved with cystic fibrosis research, I found out that my own son was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. So that's how weird. And
but the way you kept it going, I mean, and the visibility is all every place, great events, hospitals in Gunner's name, and it's just amazing to keep it going that long. I know one of our guys, Johnny Franco, is involved with a lot of stuff that you do, right? Johnny's a good friend and a good sense of charity stuff too. So I know he's done a lot of your stuff for you too, right, through the years.
100%. Johnny's been involved in a lot of different things we've done at the radio station, not just for my foundation, but Johnny's always available. He's never forgotten where he came from. And a quick story, I could have been Johnny's teammate at St. John's. A lot of people don't realize this, that Howie Gershberger was a gym teacher at East Islip High School, where I went to high school. And Howie was a roving scout for the California Angels, I believe, at the time. And he is also a coach, pitching coach, I believe, for St. John's.
Yes.
Right. So in 1977 or 78, when I was at East Islip High School, he was teaching me the rotation drill for pitchers. And I was a left-handed pitcher, so my senior year, I went undefeated, and I had a great senior year as a baseball player. As a matter of fact, I think I was a better baseball player than I was a football player. But I had already accepted a scholarship to Maryland to play football. And Howie was trying to get me to go to St. John's, and it would have been me, Frank Biola, and Johnny Franco, I believe,
pretty good.
On that staff. That would have been pretty good back in the day.
That would have been a really good staff. But let me ask you about, you know, when you began – did you think you would be doing this long? You know, Imus is a good friend of mine. He was great to me, put me on. He knew I didn't sleep, so he put me on like 4 o'clock in the morning when he came on. But did you think you would be doing this long?
Yeah, I don't know, Jay, to be honest with you. I was on with Imus too. You know, I was a part of his original show during the football season with Phil Sims. We would call in on Mondays and we'd banter back and forth with Imus and his crew. And he was really good to me. And it was interesting when he did finally get fired from WFAN. I believe it was April of 07. And I was on the line trying to call into his radiothon. And his wife, Deirdre, was actually sitting in for him because he had just been suspended because of what he said about the Rutgers women's basketball team.
Coach, right.
And so I called in, and Eddie Scazzeri, our board op now, was actually producing that show that day, that fateful day that he was fired. And as I'm calling in, Eddie says, "We're not taking any calls. Imus is just announced he got fired. And, you know, we're not taking any calls right now." I said, "Okay, man, I'm shocked. I can't believe this is happening." And I'll hang up the phone. And literally 30 seconds after I hung up the phone, my phone rang. It was my agent, Steve Rosner, who was actually in the studio that day for that telethon, because he was on the board of Joel Hollander's CJ Foundation for SIDS, which was also a part of that telethon. And Joel was in the radio business and was also running WFAN when I was with the Jets back in the early 90s. And they asked me, literally 30 seconds after I got the news, "Would you be willing to do a morning show at WFAN?" I'm like, four hours every day, five days a week, getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. You're out of your minds. And then the more I thought about it, I said, I'd give it a shot and see what happens. But they would have to pair me with the right person, of course. And it was Chris Olivero and Mark Chernoff over at WFAN who put me and Craig Harton in a studio on July 4th or 5th of 2007, said, "Here's some topics, talk it out, guys." And we talked it out. And 30 minutes after we got done talking, they said, "That's the show. That's what we're going to open with in 2007 of September." 10 years. And I've been there ever since.
But Boomer, tell me about your byplay with Phil Simms. You know, I mean, got back and forth with him, do commercials, and it's a great byplay, you know, and, you know, been friends a long time, right?
Yeah, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Phil, and I would like to thank he for me. We like to play around a little bit on TV and on radio when we're in public. We make fun of each other, but in a loving way. There's nothing mean-spirited or anything about it. We have a healthy respect for each other and what we accomplished as football players and as men. I remember covering Phil Simms' Super Bowl out in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl, where he won 22 of 25. To this day, it was one of the greatest Super Bowls I had ever seen. And I was covering it for a local CBS affiliate in Cincinnati while I was still playing for the Bengals. We hadn't gotten to that level yet. We were right behind them. They were there in 86. We got there in 88. So we were 2 years removed from each other in the Super Bowl. And I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget the way that, you know, he played that game and how he was zeroed in. So our friendship goes back a long, long time. The respect for each other has been around, you know, since the day that I met him. But, you know, we were also competitors on the field. And he'll tell me he's got the Super Bowl rings. I'll tell him I got the MVP.
And then he'll tell me. Award.
Right. Then Walter Payton Award. And then I'll tell him, you know, by the way, every time you and I were on the field together, you know, my team won. Then he'll say, "Yeah, but I threw for 513 yards against you guys in Cincinnati." So, yeah, there's always a one-upsmanship, if you will.
But we know I respect through the year. We stayed loyal to the Mets. You didn't – what was it, Fred, Craig? The Mets fans for Yankee fans. You never bought into that, right?
Mets fans for Yankees? Yeah. I was never buying into that. You know, Craig was such a front runner. You know, all he wanted was tickets behind home plate from the Yankees. Yeah. That's what he wanted. And he dragged me there. You know, but it was really funny. I got to tell you this, Jay. Here's another story that goes back to supposedly it was my Met lineage. It has nothing to do with Craig, but it was 2008. It was opening day at Shea Stadium. And the Wilpons were nice enough to invite both me and Craig to opening day to sit behind home plate with a lot of the other VIPs and people that were either owners of the Mets or were there for different reasons. And I remember telling Craig, I said, "You know, look, you're going to sit to my left and you're not going to talk to anybody." Because I don't want you embarrassing me. I don't want you to do anything stupid. I don't want you to spill your beer on Mrs. Wilpon or this, that, the other thing, you know? And we made a whole shtick out of it. I got to be honest with you. We made a whole shtick out of it. And then it became, you know, Boomer and Carton, where's Carton sitting and how he's going to, you know, basically be a pain in everybody's ass and all that other stuff. So, I mean, we had a great time together for 10 years, Craig and I. And it really one of the most enjoyable things we ever did was go to Met games. And we had a box in the original the first couple of years of City Field. We shared a box, and that became a problem because there was always some issue. They needed extra tickets, or he wanted the tickets for that game, I wanted the tickets for this game, and it became a pain in the ass. But it was part of the shtick. It was a part of the show for 10 years, and I still have wonderful memories about all of that, especially around the Mets and the success that they had in the World Series when Matt Harvey should have been taken out after eight innings, but he wasn't. And unfortunately, we lost to the Royals.
Yeah. Hey, Boomer, I listen every day. I appreciate your time and hope to see you at Citi Field next year sometime.
Anytime, Jay. My pleasure. Great to see
you, my
friend.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks a lot, Boomer.
You're welcome.